For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode is brought to you by Soccer Shots, the children's soccer experience. Soccer Shots is the official 2 to 5 year old soccer program of U.S. youth soccer. Find out more at soccershots.org/DFW North.
This is Hustle in Pro with Kelly Walker. Join Kelly as she talks sports with players, coaches, organizers, and entrepreneurs from Pee Wee League to Pro. Now here's your host, Kelly Walker.
We are sitting down with Nick Johnson. Nick is the owner of Lakes Tennis Academy. We're going to talk about his sports story. He has an interesting one, and how he became the owner here of Lakes Tennis. But first, we're also going to do some quick hits to get to know you a little bit better. Welcome, Nick.
Hey, what's up?
All right, here we go. So tell me who your all-time favorite athlete is.
Roger Federer.
What about your all-time favorite team?
Dallas Cowboys.
What's your favorite sport to play?
I can't believe I'm going to say this right now, but pickleball.
Wow. Got some follow-ups to that in a minute. Yes, I was just assuming you would say tennis. What's your favorite sport to watch?
Football.
Okay. What's the farthest distance you've ever traveled to watch sports or to play sports?
To play sports, Oklahoma.
Have you traveled any farther to watch, like a big tennis tournament or anything like that?
I have. I'm sorry I'm bad with geography, but it would be London for Wimbledon or Paris for the French Open. I'm not sure which one's further.
I don't either, but those are both fabulous places to have gone to watch sports. One last quick hit. Do you have any sports superstitions?
No, this is kind of weird, and it's not necessarily related to sports, but I always like to end, if there's a number anyway, with a 7. I don't know why, and that's not always with sports, just kind of general quirk of life.
A lucky number kind of thing.
Yeah.
All right, so now I want to dive into your story personally, and also some of the young athletes that are coming out of here. So first I want to start with Junior Wimbledon. That's kind of the latest thing that's on the radar here in Frisco, and everybody's excited about it. So talk to me a little bit about Savannah and Abigail and how you know them and how they came through here. Or
okay.
Just one of them.
Yeah, Savannah came over, I think, about 2.5 years ago. She was kind of starting her ranking in Texas and just has worked hard, a great family committed. So she started getting really good, started getting nationally ranked, and really probably the last 6 to 12 months started working, you know, more toward an ITF, which is a junior world ranking. So she got into the U.S. Open in New York last year, the qualifying for the girls. Played a great match but lost. Couldn't go to Australia, too far, probably not worth the time for what she was ranked. But she got in the French Open, had a little good run, and I think right before that she met Abigail Forbes, who trains out of Florida. Abigail's 18, Savannah is 16, and they teamed up to play for the first time together, I think in the French Open, and played, okay. Had a good match, and I think they lost first round.
That was going to be one of my questions when I saw them teamed up, and I thought, okay, she's not from here, so they probably haven't been, you know, a pair and teamed up all the time, and I wondered how long before this Wimbledon tournament did they get to play together? So you're saying the French Open, like how time frame wise, like how long?
Couple weeks.
Oh, wow.
Couple weeks. So, you know, when you're talking about world ranking, I think Savannah going in was about 42 in the world. Abigail's pretty close. So when you're going to those tournaments, you know, from the United States, there's only a few folks probably that really even make sense for you to play with and, you know, partner wise at the same level. And so, yeah, it was kind of a first time at the French Open. And there is one tournament called Roehampton that a lot of players play. You can't find grass in Texas. So if you want to play on grass once before you play your first round at Wimbledon, mm-hmm. you want to play Roehampton, which is kind of between that French Open and Wimbledon. So they did play Roehampton together. And interestingly enough, they lost to the same people in Roehampton, the warm-up tournament for Wimbledon, that they lost to in the French Open.
Was the people that beat them, did they go to Wimbledon? Surely, right?
Yeah, you're going to steal the end of the story.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. That's ironic. That's who they played in the finals in the fifth round. Same girls.
So third time was a charm.
Third time was a charm. They've only played together three times.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, crazy, huh?
It is crazy.
That's the one you want to win if you're going to win one of the three, right?
Right. They were just warming up the first couple
yeah,
tournaments.
Exactly.
Getting there, scouting them and figuring out how to beat them, right?
Yep.
And when you talk about that, though, is a lot of that strategy of how to beat somebody that's now beat you twice in a row, is that your coaches figuring out the strategy on how to beat those other players? Or is that, in this sport at that level, is it the player figuring it out?
Yeah. Good question, and I should not take any credit on coaching of any sort, but I did talk to their coach, Dave Licker, that was with them, and you know, his big thing with Savannah throughout the tournament is not really about strategy as much as mental. At that level, she's powerful, she's strong, she knows, but on that stage, you can imagine, you know, being a 16-year-old girl, the emotions, traveled, you spent all this money, and now you got to, you know, the match goes by quick. So he spends tons of time talking to her, particularly about how to think and how to manage emotions and really manage mess-ups.
Mm. Come back, how to not let it
absolutely
you, throw you off or derail you.
Yep.
Well, that's fascinating. So does Savannah still work out here?
Yep.
Is she actively, like, what's her next step then? I mean,
Savannah got back from Wimbledon, had multiple interviews with television stations. It was super cool.
Yeah.
And she had a super cool experience after she won the finals of Wimbledon. She didn't realize the winners of the junior doubles gets invited to the Wimbledon ball. Like the Royal Ball. So Djokovic and Federer played in the men's final. Serena and Halep played. So the tradition is that night, Sunday night, is the winner's dance. They do the first dance, Djokovic, Halep. Savannah gets invited to that.
Oh.
She didn't even have enough clothes to be playing 5 days later because she didn't think she'd win.
Let alone a ball.
Right.
You know, what to
so
wear.
These ladies take her in her room. They have all these dresses lined out. Savannah goes and she picks her dress.
How cool.
They give her a dress. Now, she doesn't get to keep it.
Sure.
But then they, here's your jewelry, here's your handbag.
Wow.
And they take her and they do her hair and she goes off to the Wimbledon ball.
How cool. She got to be fancy.
Like
up.
a Cinderella story.
Yeah, so it really
just,
is.
So.
Well, that's fascinating. So I'm excited and, I mean, it's just prideful that she's from Frisco. And
so fun.
One of, you know, Frisco Tennis Academy's own local kids. So that's great. And excited to keep watching her to see where she goes from here.
So I'm sorry, I kind of threw that in because I think it's such a cool story.
It is.
But what's she doing next? She is, this week, she's in San Diego. It is Girls Hardcourt Nationals, which is about the biggest hardcourt tournament in the United States. It's in San Diego. The boys are in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And we have another player named Kaylee Evans that's also there in San Diego. We have a coach there, and we have a coach at Kalamazoo. So Savannah will play that, and then she will play the U.S. Open in New York. The big one, and her partner Abigail turns 19 in September or October, so they can actually play together one more tournament. The U.S. Open set like September 1st.
So she ages out.
Yeah, so they get to come back. Now there's going to be pressure this time after coming off the win. So that's what she's doing next.
That's exciting. Sounds like you've got Lakes Tennis kids all over the country, playing and qualifying. Very cool. Okay, I'm gonna back up a tiny bit and talk about your story and how you got to own this place here, right here in the middle of Frisco. So I think your story is very inspiring, and you weren't necessarily able to take the straight path to being the star tennis player that you probably thought you wanted to be. So can you fill us in a little bit about like the diagnosis that shaped your path in tennis?
Yep, I went to Lindale High School, small town. Was kind of good for Lindale, which is like very, very, very low-level high school tennis compared to some cities. But I loved it more than anyone I knew. So when I graduated, the only Division I school that would consider me in the country was Oral Roberts University. And so I took it, again, because I love tennis so much. I didn't even play. I was like number eight. I was the hitting dummy. But again, I loved it. And things, Oral Roberts was not a good fit for me, personality, especially back then. And so I transferred to University of North Texas. It was 94, halfway through my freshman year, because we had beaten University of North Texas. So I thought, hey, maybe there's a chance I could play tennis there. Well, the first month I was there, I had a bad stomach ache, had some roommates that said, hey, you know, you don't look good. You should go to the health center. So I went to the tiny little health center at University of North Texas, which, you know, is a very small place. And I got a blood test, and basically they told me I had leukemia. And I was
out,
like,
of nowhere.
Out of
you
nowhere.
You didn't think you were sick except the little stomach bug you thought you had, right?
Nope. And I remember the doctor came in. It was February 1st of 94. I was 19. I'm like, there's no way I have leukemia. Like, I've been playing college tennis. I've been doing crunches.
You know, I'm healthy. There's
no way. Yeah. And they're like, oh, yeah, you need to really accept this. And she said, you have a window based on our research of about 2 months to 2 years to live. And the sooner you can accept that, you'll probably have less depression, less down, just accepting that that's what you're looking at.
Wow.
And I was like, what? And basically they gave me a little booklet. Back in 94, bone marrow transplants were not very common. And they just, you know, there was like a, you know, but one in four are doing this new experiment called a bone marrow transplant. And so if you want to swing for the fence, you can do it. But, you know, about one in four die as well. There's some relapses and all that.
And it's so, not easy. It's not painless.
Not easy. And, you know, you don't know if you have a match. One in four siblings is a match. And I have one sibling, and he's his perfect match.
Oh, my goodness.
So they said, hey, if anybody's right for to try it, to do this trial, you know, your brother matches, you're diagnosed pretty early, swing for it.
Wow.
So
how fast does that happen?
May of 94. I actually kind of finished the semester. Weirdest semester of my life, thinking about 2 months to 2 years left. That's really odd. Yeah. Crazy. Made me reassess everything I was doing in my life and what I had put priorities on. And then had the transplant in May. My brother's perfect match. Lost all my hair. In fact, I shaved a mohawk and then woke up. And when it started to fall out, I stood in front of a mirror and I pulled my mohawk out. People don't know that when you... the chemo ejects, breaks off of the scalp.
Yeah.
So I pulled my mohawk out, and then my brother's bone marrow went in, and 30 days later they said, it worked, you're cured.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That they went from 2 months to 2 years to, what, 6 months later, you're good.
Yeah, you're good. I'm like, are you sure? You sure about that?
Yeah.
So
strange. How'd that change your tennis world then?
Well, in the meantime, there's something called Title IX happening where they cancel men's sports and keep women's. So UNT, in the meantime, I thought, man, I could be a cool story that I could train, and 6 months later I could come back from leukemia and play. So I kind of start training, but they took away the men's tennis team, kept the women's, took away men's soccer, kept the women's.
Yep.
And so I thought, wow, I can either transfer, which I'm not that good anyways, let's be honest. But I had a guy, I'd gone to a place called Denton Bible Church, was really involved there. I had a guy that ran Glen Eagles Country Club, calls me out of the blue, doesn't even know me. He said, hey, I think you can be a tennis pro at Glen Eagles Country Club, primarily just work with the junior classes. And I'm like, a tennis pro? What? A tennis pro? You know, you don't really know anything about me. I'm not very good at what he goes, hey, I just want someone that wants to have an impact on kids. Do you want to have a positive impact on kids? Absolutely. Do you love tennis? Yes. And he said, that's what I'm looking for. I don't care how good you are. So I'm like, he said, I'll pay you $15 an hour. And I'm like, unbelievable. I will drive from Denton. It's in a beautiful neighborhood in Plano.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Deion Sanders lived right down the street with a gold, you know, gold fence and all that, prime time.
Yep.
And so went down and I started working for him. And I found out I was more in love with teaching because I loved it and I loved people. That's what I really loved about it the whole time. And, you know, playing wise, it was always frustrating. So, you know, stuff didn't click. So I got to teach, especially younger kids that I didn't realize I could have an impact on. They would look up at me just because I was a tennis pro, so to speak. So fell in love with it there at Glen Eagles.
How'd you find Lakes Tennis here in Frisco?
So I reached out to the owner of Lakes Tennis Academy. At the same time, he was splitting ties with his managing partner, who was his son-in-law. And the month of the son-in-law and his daughter's divorce, I was hired to become the managing partner. And Actually, I had no ownership. I was just he was a managing partner. I was just a manager, and came in, and the facility was losing. Kurt was very clear about the facility was losing a lot of money. I still remember my interview, and he said, "Hey, you need to know." And he was very quick. He was running a lot of businesses. He was very successful, but tennis he never even meant to get into. It was to help the son-in-law that was now out. And I still remember the interview. He said, "Hey, we're not making any money. I see no reason that we're ever going to make money. We're year in five, and you have a limited amount of time. If it doesn't make money, I'm going to bulldoze the place."
Wow, that sounds exciting.
I was like, oh,
it's a positive. Let me take this.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Well, but you did it, right?
I came in. This is just still remember it, just in that office. And he says, "So how much money do you need to start tomorrow?" And I said,
"Wow."
I said, "I need $100,000. And he said, "Okay, you start tomorrow." And I was like, "Dang it, what an idiot.
For more.
Why don't you just say something?" Bet. And that was it. In July of 2004, so I started working for Mr. Wellwood. He was awesome. He would come in. He would teach me business stuff and kind of develop me. He would just disappear. Run his other stuff.
Yeah.
He was like, "Hey, I know how to train you. Just do stuff. Make a lot of mistakes." And boy, did I make a lot of mistakes. Feel like I kind of bluffed my way into the position. I don't really know how
not
to run a facility, you know.
Sometimes.
And so, you know, you learn the hard way. And here we are about 2 years later. First year, we lost less. Second year, we broke even, made a tiny bit of money going into the next one. And he was really gone less and less as he saw it turn around. And he, again, a great person to work with, still a great relationship. One of the big things, we hired my wife to do the accounting, so I knew where we were bleeding money. Mm-hmm. And I just asked him one day, sitting in this room, I just said, "Hey, is there any chance I could buy in just a tiny bit? Because I could see it was going to start turning." And he said, "Oh, absolutely. You can buy the whole thing." I said, "What? The whole thing? No way. He said, "Absolutely. You can keep this place making profits, finance. You keep the payments coming. You can buy it from me.
Wow.
You miss the payment, drop the keys and walk out the door. It's really easy." I was like, "I think I'm really excited right now." Went home and told my wife, and she's like, "He said, what? We can buy the whole thing? No way." I'm like, "Yeah, we got to deliver."
Like, sure, but you were doing that anyway.
We were starting to.
But then it was all yours to do, to, you know, to keep it and
yes.
Hey, baby.
Yes.
Now, how many years ago was that?
That was the end of 2006.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So I'd been here about 2.5 years when that happened. So I've owned it since, it was like December 31st, 2006.
And now it's a large facility, multi-use, all kinds of things happening in, through here. Give me a quick recap of what we see here at Lakes Tennis Academy.
Man, we've been so fortunate. You know, we only want to be good or great at two things. One is moving you from one level to the next as fast as possible. We want to be phenomenal at developing, and we want you to feel like you're cared for genuinely and part of the community. That's all that we try to do. And that doesn't matter if you're 5 years old or a 32-year-old woman or a 16-year-old that's ranked in Texas.
Yeah.
And that philosophy goes through everything. And so right now we've got a ton of kids at all levels getting better. We've got prodigy 8-year-olds. We've got a girl that's playing $25,000 challengers. This one. We got a boy, well, he's 25, got in the main draw of the U.S. Open, had to qualify, and Australian Open. He played Djokovic in the first round of Australian Open, the men's. After he qualified, he trains out of here.
Wow.
Several pros. So right now, it's a lot of ladies that they are social, but that really want to get better and that they want to be pushed and they want to be treated kind of like these high-performance kids. Don't just make me feel good about myself. And so we're really trying to really put our stake in the sand, kind of like we did with juniors years ago. We're going to be, hey, if you're a lady and you really want to get better, we're going to start pushing harder. And we are finding so many ladies are saying, "I want to get better. I want you to train me right."
Yeah.
You know, believe that I can get better. Push me like you think you can push me.
That's how I would be.
It's
like if I'm going to take the time to do it, I want to get better every time I'm here.
Yeah.
Get better and better.
I don't care who you are. You want to win. It feels good to win, you know?
When you were younger, you played other sports besides tennis as a kid, right?
I did.
What other sports did you play?
I played basketball. I was more awful at basketball than I was at tennis. I was good at water skiing. That's one of my few. I'm decent at ping pong, love snow skiing, and I skateboarded for a while.
All right.
But
what's this pickleball you talk about?
Pickleball is like between, I'd say, ping pong and tennis. And I just like it because I've always loved ping pong. I love tennis, but it's a newer sport. It's one of the fastest growing sports in the country. And it's just a lot of touch. So it kind of be like a little bit, kind of like mini tennis or a little bit bigger, but it's a touch game. And
what's the court that it's played? Or where
it's played on, like, you could turn a court sideways and kind of fit in half.
Okay. A tennis court.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Is there like pickleball leagues in Frisco?
You know what? You know what? I've played just a few times. There's a place out in East Texas that we visit that has it. My friend Craig Bell will line his tennis court. My friend Henry over at Glen Eagles, he said sometimes he'll get more people on Glen Eagles Country Club for a Friday night pickleball event than tennis. And so it's something great to mix in, but there's very few people that do it. And it's a pain in the rear to go tape your tennis court off because then that tape's there and you got to remove it. And we have so much tennis and do it at such a high level. We don't really have court space for it. But, man, I've been trying to expand and look at some other areas that we could maybe do a little bit of that as well. It'd be fun.
Well, I've learned something about pickleball. It's about sports today. Pickleball.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes. Yeah.
I want to ask you about Frisco and youth athletes. Is Frisco a hotbed for youth tennis?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have families moving here. I don't know how many have moved or bought second homes here. But you can go to Florida. That used to be the thing back years ago. If you got to a certain level and you really want to be good, so we're hearing more and more families are staying in Texas. You do that with a kind of a national level staff. You got to have national level kids, but a big part of it, a lot of these players are not going to be pro, but a ton of ours are going to be Division I college players. So we're in a fortunate spot where, you know, these recruiting colleges, TCU, Texas A&M, University of Texas, they, you know, University of Tennessee will come and visit and actually watch our practices. So you can imagine as a tennis parent, when a college coach is coming just to watch practice, it's kind of a circular thing because the better kids you have, the more the college coaches want to come.
More so chance they'll come here.
Right now, it's regular conversations between a handful of my pros of that next level Division I.
You mentioned a bunch of D1 schools. Scholarships is a hot topic for parents my age who are sending kids into high school, and of course, that's what everybody around here talks about. What do you see from your perspective here for tennis scholarships for Frisco players?
Girls have a significant advantage. NCAA's Division I allows 8 girl full rides. So you're not even playing top 6, and you can get a full ride as a female. It goes back to that Title IX.
Yep.
Now, for boys, it's 4.5. So you might be number 2 on the team and still having to share a scholarship to be able to get 8 deep, especially when you're playing singles and doubles. And so there's great potential for both because of the level of players that you have to play here, which, you know, it's not like golf where you against the course. You need somebody across the net that can be pushing you. And so right now in Frisco, that's people are having to come to Frisco to have someone across the net that can beat them at a certain level. And it's contagious. And so there's a lot of opportunity for college scholarships, and even more so for girls.
So Frisco is setting that high bar for local tennis players.
Absolutely.
People are coming here to get the competitive, just to be in the same class of people training with the higher level players.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I think last year we got a very cool award, Development Program of the Year, but the United States Tennis Association called. It was like number 2 in the country, and he said, look, y'all had like 31 players qualify for national events, and I think he said number 2 in Texas had 8.
Wow.
I don't know who that is.
I wonder what market that is.
You know, I don't know where that market is, but he said that's, you know, basically that's where you start the, you know, all the recruiting, all that stuff, potential.
So it's not just good. It's above and beyond.
We didn't know. Yeah. We had no idea. And that can change at any moment. There's a bunch of other great places in Texas, and we all push each other. But that was last year. But there's another year rolling around.
Yeah, it's good, but I doubt it's something that's going to be not good anytime soon. I mean, you've got the momentum. And like you said, the more momentum you have, then the better players and families and people you're attracting. And so surely the momentum will maintain.
Between that award in Indian Wells, California, they flew us out. It was really nice. They gave it to us at a big tournament. It's beautiful out in Palm Springs. That was in March. Between that award, Savannah winning Wimbledon, the phone is ringing off the hook. Not just the news, but you know, the news reporters, but players coming. We even since then, we've had even just this week, 2 9-year-old kids talking about one family's looking at houses, a second home today for their 9 and 5-year-old child. Now they're great. We looked at those kids and we're like, wow.
We'll
here's some incredible, fantastic, but we're getting even younger. We've had that at 14 and 16 where they're all already fantastic and maybe in a market, but now it's starting to trickle in more. So we hope the momentum stays, but we're, you know, we've added a couple brand new staff that are really some of the highest level developers in the country.
Well, I'm glad you're busy. I'm glad your phone is ringing off the hook, and I'm glad that the momentum is strong here in Frisco for tennis. So thanks for giving Lifestyle Frisco a minute to talk
to you. Thank you. Y'all, fingers crossed, we're doing our best, but thank you for coming out and chatting. And
yeah.
Man, we're in Frisco. It's, you know, we couldn't be more lucky, fortunate, whatever word you want to have for it. So to be a sports city, best place to raise an athlete, we just kind of happened to fall here. You know, the place was built in 99. It wasn't known for either of those two things. And we just had no idea where we would end up later. So
well, I'm glad you stuck with it and made it what it is.
Yeah,
good deal. And
awesome.
I think good things come around to good business owners who want the best for the right reasons. And so you and your wife have stuck with it and made it something great. So congrats.
I appreciate that. Thank you. We try to be good people most of the time.
Best wishes to you guys in the future here.
All right. Thanks.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.